Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Tom Gregory is a British singer and songwriter, and he's a musician who wears his heart on his sleeve. Tom has had a massive series of airplay hits across Europe, including Run to You, Fingertips, Rather Be You, Never Let Me Down with Visay, River, Footprints, and more recently Forget Somebody and Never Look Back. After school, he had a brief sojourn in a band named Kings and received some airplay on BBC Radio 1. He then tried his hand at acting and was in the BBC drama series The A Word. Tom ended up hating acting and he flew to Germany to see a friend and found himself in a club speaking with that friend's older brother who offered to be his manager. A chance conversation inspired him to start recording his own music. He uploaded his songs to SoundCloud and managed to catch the attention of a dance label in Hamburg. They paired him with the producer Matt James of the electronic duo M22. Tom continues to perform around the world and play in front of fans of up to 15 to 50,000 people. He has also opened for the band One Republic in Europe. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Tom Gregory. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I am in Berlin at the moment. I'm staying with my girlfriend. She's just moved here, so I'm helping her with all that shenanigans that's involved, if anyone's ever moved, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners have, helping her with that. And hanging around one of the coolest cities in the world, I would say.
Lovely. Now let's rewind. At what age, whether you as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be in this world of creativity. And how did that journey progress?
I'd say quite late, to be honest. I mean, I never, especially where I grew up. So I grew up in the north of England in a little town called Blackpool, which is about 45 minutes, an hour away from Manchester. So I grew up just outside of Blackpool and, yeah, never really considered music as a viable career. It's quite a working class area. I grew up in a middle class family, but in a working class area, and both my parents from a working class background. So, you know, music was never really like an option for me in terms of a career. But I would say I've always had an interest in music. I always had an interest in music. But I don't think it was probably until I left school, about 18, 19, that I thought, well, I'm not really interested in anything else. And I'm kind of now, you know, life and peer pressure and I guess the social construct that we now live in forces you to make a decision, or certainly like thrusts a decision upon you at 18, 19 when you leave school, and you've got to decide what you want to do basically for the rest of your life. And I was never comfortable with that. I always kind of, I never really felt like I had a place. I went to university, I think it lasted about a week, studied history. I moved on to another course and kind of, quit and just decided it wasn't for me. And that's kind of when it dawned on me that, well, you're not a very good footballer, and that is your second love in life beside music. So you better try start digging a music career for yourself. And that's kind of how it all started, really. Yeah, and you know, I always knew that I could write songs. I knew that I was creative. I loved music, but it wasn't until then that I'd really considered it as a career. And even then, you know, I remember the decision of being like, okay, well, I'm going to give this a stab, and if I don't make it by the time I'm, you know, 25, 26, then I'll probably just do something else. So I've got like 5 or 6 years of this, and then I'll kind of, you know, I'll sack it off if nothing comes of it. And luckily for me, the road was, the road went sideways and backwards and whatnot. But a couple of years in, I managed to kind of start the madness that now is a music career, and now I'm here chatting to you. So yeah, and you probably want me to go into more detail about it, but yeah, that's basically how it started off. I was never like this, oh my god, he's a child prodigy and can play 8th grade piano, 10. That was never really my thing. I just always had a massive, genuine love for music that really wasn't thrust upon me, apart from, like, you know, my dad loved music and gave me all these records, and I used to listen to everything that he'd bring home, and he used to buy me CDs, and then when I'd listen to that, I would get a new one. But it was never really thrust upon me. So I guess by kind of sheer naivety and love for the craft of songwriting and music, I just ended up here.
How did you know that you could write songs? You know, you were writing things, but did you know at the time, okay, this is a song? How did you know that within yourself?
It's quite a hard question to answer that, because I guess it starts out as pure naivety.
Okay.
And thinking, yes. well, this sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
But you don't really know. It's so hard to judge what good is, especially. Yep. I don't like being too philosophical or artistic around this subject, because, you know, it is so subjective, isn't it? What good and bad is. But there are kind of, you know, that there are hidden rules in art, aren't there? I guess that kind of, no matter how big or small people can argue that they'll be, there are like, There are parameters of maybe what is good and what is bad to a degree, especially pop music with what I do. But I say it was, I started writing songs really at like 16 or 15. And obviously, I look back now and they were crap. And I'd wrote this one song in particular that actually ended up getting me signed. But that's for, that was many years later. But I wrote this song, and I thought, it's got something. I don't know what something is, or but it's got something. And I just always, I always remember thinking, oh, there's something in what I'm doing. I'm not Elton John, but there's something in this. So yeah, to say that now I would have gone on to do what I've done, I would have never have imagined, to be honest. There's quite frankly more chance of me becoming an astronaut, mate. But yeah, in my eyes. Yeah.
As you dived into this world of being a professional musician, and you said, okay, you only give it 5 or 6 years, were there any aspects of it at the time or during the process that you were actually surprised, oh, this is part of it? And how did you feel when those steps were starting to be built to get bigger and bigger and more successful?
I guess your question's in two parts.
Yes.
Remind me of the first bit. I'm ADHD, so I was thinking about, I'm thinking about the price of beans in Korea, you know.
In Korea even. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. As part of the process of deciding to do this professionally, were there any elements that you were actually like, oh, I didn't realize that this would be part of it?
Okay, yeah. Do you know what? I think looking back, you always hear the term the music business.
Yes.
But I guess I keep using the word naivety, but I think that is probably how 99.999% of musicians really start, because there's actually no viable reason to choose music as a career other than just being blindly in love with music and naive to think that you can do it. And I think that with all that considered, I'd never thought about the business aspects of music. So I think that's the thing that I wouldn't say shocked me, but I do think now, and it's probably been the same throughout time, hasn't it? But you do have to be a business person, or at least have good business people or business minded people around you, to also kind of make this a viable career. And that's not something I'd ever considered. You just think, oh wow, I'll write songs and I can go on stage and it's all amazing. But the web behind it and the logistics behind it, I think looking back, I'd never really considered that.
So you referenced that you didn't expect it to get where it was, the success.
Mm-hmm.
When it was building and building and it got to the point, you know, obviously it's still growing, you know, the elements and steps we can still climb, but when it was building and got to a point of success, were you surprised, or was like, okay, I've been building the blocks to create this house, and this is just the foundations and the results of all the building?
I mean, do you know what? The only thing I can compare it to, maybe, and I'm not a sports person, but the feeling of you've prepared so much in your own head of what it must feel like to reach a certain target or level or goal. Or in my case, it was my first goal was like just a song on a song getting a million streams. And then you do that, but you've thought about it for so long. And then obviously, you know, a lot of my songs have gone on to do way more than that, which is amazing, especially if I'd have told myself when I started. But I don't know, there is an element where you think about it for so long and you go over what it must feel like, you know, standing in front of the mirror, what it must feel like to play for X amount of people, what it must feel like to have a number one on radio or have a gold record, all these things. And then when it happens, it's almost like in sport, you've climbed the mountain, and then when you're at the top of it, you're not exhausted, but you're just like, it doesn't, this is amazing, but where's the next peak?
Yeah,
and I think probably most musicians, most people in sport, or most people that do kind of extraordinary things like I've just said, we'll probably say the same thing. And I'm still doing that now, you know. I'm trying to get better at giving myself more credit.
Yeah.
But I guess I've never fully felt like, wow, this is, I felt, wow, this is unbelievable, but it's kind of, it's very split second, and you always move on to the next. I think might have been, I want to say it was Ed Sheeran or someone said, I can't remember, a big musician anyway, I was listening to a podcast a couple of months ago, and it is the thing where the goalposts do just get wider and wider. So you never really feel like you've made it. But certainly, you know, 15-year-old me was looking up at what I've done now. He'd be screaming at me.
Screaming in what way? Screaming as in like, well done?
Yeah, I think just okay. Excitement and, yes. and joy. And I think that's just life, isn't it? You know, again, like going back to the question that you asked before, what were some of the things that you don't expect? I think, you know, obviously people see the music video and all the bits on stage. And everything you do as a musician basically is in the studio, writing great songs, building that to play them on the stage. And I think that, yeah, those parts are actually only 20-30% of what we do. And the rest is all, like you say, you know, building blocks, navigating the business, navigating who you want to work with and making decisions. And so a bit of a long-winded answer, sorry, but you know, it's a complex answer, you know. It's like I tell you what, you could probably ask you could probably ask that question to musicians who are far bigger than me, and there's, you know, there's a lot, but they'll give you the same answer, or a similar answer, I would say. And I think, you know what, if I ever felt satisfied, if I ever felt satisfied or content, I'd probably go and play golf.
Even though it's that the goalposts get bigger and bigger, maintains that.
That's not a negative thing, by the way. It's all, you know, it's all. I think I've just realized that probably sounds really negative, but yeah, actually, it's it keeps the hunger. I think hunger is a great word. Yeah, it's it keeps that hunger, because there's that old saying, isn't it, that when boxers start to wake up in silk sheets, it changes. I don't know if a lot of your listeners might not be into boxing. I don't know. I am, but a boxer trains in a dirty gym for years and builds his career, and then, you know, makes a load of money fighting, and then thinks, what's the point in getting up in the morning?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's exactly the same in music, but it's kind of the goalposts getting wider is a way of just remotivating yourself all the time. And that's something that I'm lucky that I have, I think, because you do see a lot of musicians or people in sport, and they maybe achieve what they set out to do or get to a certain point in their career, and you can kind of see that maybe they're not as into it or in terms of output.
What I've started doing every Monday, I stand up and I pat myself on the back and I say,
absolutely.
I say out loud, well done. You've done good work this week. Well done. Because I also feel that in order to be recognized, you need to recognize yourself. And I agree, a lot of people, especially when things are happening quickly and fast, they forget the recognition of themselves and they get
stuck. Oh, I do. I totally do. And you've probably heard a little bit of that in what I said.
Exactly.
I totally do. I am the worst. I'm one of the worst people for it. And actually, I'm getting better at it. But I am, you're totally bang on. It is important to do it. And it's that balance of doing that, but also maintaining that hunger when you do achieve things to keep going. I'll probably always have a hint of that in me, which is why someone might possibly have to kick me off the stage one day and say,
No, we don't want that. So maybe put in your diary or put in your reminders every Monday morning as you get up, just stand up and say, well done, good work this week, and it will motivate you for the rest, because it does for me. And ever since I've started doing that, which has been a couple of months, it just takes that moment to ground me and like, okay, what have I accomplished this past week? And it builds up for the energy for the next week.
I'm also lucky because I've got so many people around me that just shower me with love.
Yes.
And that tell me all the time. And yeah, I think that really helps me as well, to be honest. But you know what? As I'm getting older, I've got so much better at it. I'm almost...
Okay, good.
What I've said in the last 2 or 3 minutes is probably... I'm probably describing... Since I'm trying to go chronologically through everything for you, I'm probably describing myself 4 or 5, more like 3, 4, 5 years ago, where you know maybe I didn't give myself enough credit. Now I still do, but I still also love looking at what's next. That's the nature of the music industry. It's like you put an album out, and then it's like, all right, cool. Where's the next one? Let's go. Well done. But where's the next one? When's the next show? You just played this show, but then, you know, 2 days later, you've got another show, and that's just as great. So it's like, it's all so fast paced. And I think maybe it's a great coping mechanism as well, I would say, for a lot of people to be like that and not to maybe absorb everything at once.
That's interesting. That's a very interesting observation. Now, Tom, you mentioned creating music. So let's unpack that. How do you create a song?
Well, for me, I've got a writing partner that I've done most of my songs with, a guy called Matt James. And I'm quite lucky that he grew up 10 minutes away from me. And by some stroke of luck, he's the only other successful, not the only one, but at the time of me starting out my career, was one of the only guys in my area that I knew was a producer.
Yes. But
more strangely, he was doing it at a really high level. And the town that I'm from, I wouldn't say, I'm from a town, I'm from Fleetwood originally. I was born in Blackpool, but I grew up in Fleetwood, which, if you know Fisherman's Friends, it's where they're made. There's kind of a rich history of fishing in Fleetwood and industry, but not, you know, it's not known for musicians.
Okay.
So the fact that I had this other producer on my doorstep that I'd met randomly through someone else, I didn't know him growing up, that lived 10 minutes away from me, was like the biggest stroke of luck in the world. And I realize I haven't answered your question, but to answer your question now with that as kind of a prefix, for me, it's very hard to write songs, actually.
Okay.
And I think writing songs can be easy if you create the right conditions. And I think that I'm quite lucky because when I met Matt, who I've just told you about, I had the right condition. I felt like I had the right conditions for the first time. And I was able to work with someone that I trusted who understood me, where I'm from, because obviously he's from the same area, was super talented. And yeah, for me, how to write songs is a it's really hard to answer. Sometimes the music comes, I can say, like, you know, sometimes the music comes first, sometimes the lyrics come first. But for me, it's a lot about creating the right conditions, trust. I mean, God, we spent the first 6 months of knowing each other just playing PlayStation and ordering Chinese food. I think it was at his house for 3 or 4 months out of 6 months, and we'd be just hanging out. And that was very kind of calculated on his part. He just wanted me to start to trust him. And yeah, I did. And yeah, that's kind of been my creative process ever since, is working with him. Obviously, I've gone off to do little bits and bobs with other people, but he is 95% of what I do. And in terms of the actual creation of the songs and what it looks like, it's pretty much, we record everything, in Cleveleys, which is where he lives, just outside of Fleetwood, where I grew up. And he's got a studio in his house. He's built like a studio in his garage, and we literally will sit on his sofa and talk and just say, right, well, what are we going to do today? And I heard a lot of people think that's really odd. Like, oh, do you not go in with stuff? And we never do. We kind of just sit there and chat and live. Because I hate studios, to be honest. I really don't. I don't like music studios. They can be quite sterile at times.
Okay,
music studios. Is it because, you know? You go to some studios and there's plaques everywhere and there's, you know, photos on the walls and you're looking at a gold disc.
Yeah, yeah.
From a massive artist that you'll never outsell. And it's like, I don't know, it can be quite sterile, and for me, not that creative. So doing it in that environment's really great. And yeah, we managed, for whatever reason, to always just come up with something, and maybe 30% of it, 20% of it, which is the stuff that you'll hear, will be great. And asking me how we do it, I've got no bloody idea. We just do it. And that's not me being facetious or trying to give a clever answer. But to be honest, we just do it. I think we trust each other, and we just write great songs because we don't really think about it. We relax, we talk, we live, and every now and again we get a great song.
So you referenced earlier that sometimes you've collaborated with other people. Has it taken you a while to build that same trust that you have with Matt, or how do you approach those situations?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard, that, actually. It's hard. I think some people you go and work with, and they're just so supremely talented that you're always going to come out with something great, whether the level of trust is as big as what it is with Matt, is you know, one of my best friends, as well as someone that I work with. Yeah, I would say it's hard, but yeah, learning over the last years, especially working with Matt, working with other people, you just kind of learn the process. I wouldn't also say that I'm the same vulnerable 20-year-old, 21-year-old that I was when I started in the music industry and was finding producers that I wanted to work with. I'm able to kind of navigate a room on my own. I mean, God, when I started studio sessions, I think I'd done about 10 studio sessions when I met Matt, five to 10 studio sessions. I didn't really have any experience of what it was like to be in a room with someone else. It was just me creating songs in a bedroom. And it's a total other skill when you're opposite someone else and trying to pour your heart out. So reflecting, my answer before might have sounded a bit wishy-washy to people, but the importance of trusting someone when you're in a room, when you're trying to write a song, and be honest, because that's, you know, writing a song is just, you've got 3 minutes to pour your heart out and be honest with people. And it's hard to do that with people that you don't know. So yeah, with what I said before, the trust part is actually massive, because you need it, especially in my case. Like I said, I was just an anxious, inexperienced 20-year-old that had never written songs with anyone else, just in my bedroom.
What's coming up for the rest of the next few months?
Next few months, so recording a lot more music, to be honest. a lot more music in the pipeline. Another release hopefully coming very soon in the next 8 weeks. A lot of music. I'm playing a lot of festival shows now in the summer. In Germany, some in Switzerland. So really exciting. And then hopefully towards the end of the year, something a bit more substantial in terms of maybe a collection of songs. I think that music industry is so fast paced now that you've got to have songs ready, and then what you do with them kind of comes afterwards. And that's where I'm at. We've got a lot of stuff ready, and now it's just deciding what to put out and how and when and how we box it up. But I've just been, to be honest, nailing the studio, and we've got some really good songs that I feel like are me now, you know, represent who I am now as a person and not the 20-year-old that I was just talking about.
I love me a CD. I love the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, the thank yous.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, vinyls, cassettes, massive comebacks all around the world. Vinyls, at least last year, 5.9 million sales, the biggest since 1990.
That's mad.
Also, last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. And because of the upsurge of CDs, that product is now back in the basket, and there needs to be a certain amount of changes every day for it to be in there. The research is showing that it's the teenagers that are diving into this world, not the older nostalgic people. And then we've also got the streaming platforms. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I think it's complex. Like you said, like who would have thought 30 years ago that you would say in 30 years, there'll be no more CDs. We will have moved into an age where you can access all music or most music on a subscription basis, and that then CDs will also make a comeback. It'll be mostly young people that buy them. To be honest, I was walking through Berlin before, and young people just look so good. I say that as if I'm not one, but I'm 30 at the end of the year. So I was walking down the street, and I was just observing like how cool young people are at the moment. The fashion, things that they wear. There's a lot of like 90s fashion. I look back at some pictures of me at like 18, 19. I looked terrible. I looked awful. There was just there weren't the platforms to kind of discover that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of fed to you on TV, or, you know, what your friends wore at school. What did your mate listen to? Whereas now there's so much things to access out there with the internet that, I think that, doesn't really surprise me that now kids are going, well, oh, it's really cool that we can access all this music on Spotify, but just like we can access all this great fashion from the 90s and the 80s, which they're clearly wearing. I mean, if you go to a Liam Gallagher concert, or if you go to an Oasis concert that is coming up in the summer, you'll see so many young people there wearing the clobber and the clothes from the 90s. It's still kind of stood the test of time. I'm only referring to one time period there, but it doesn't surprise me that then, you know, young people are going, oh, well, there was all this cool stuff back then. Things were so much more tangible, and oh, look at this. We can buy CDs, and that's really cool. It's collectible. It's not through a screen. It's real. So yeah, it does make sense to me. As for where the landscape is, who knows where it's going? I think that, if you'd have told me 10 years ago that TikTok, Instagram, Twitter was around 10 years ago, but if you'd have told me that those three entities be as big as they are, and actually also define music culture as well, in a way, with kind of the algorithm and trend system that's been happening the last couple of years, then I'd have said you were crazy. So it'll be interesting in the next couple of years.
Mm.
If we have this conversation in 10 years, it will be interesting to see the next thing that has kind of ripped the music industry open and changed it.
I'm going to hold you to that, tenure interview. We'll have a follow-up, but I'm sure we'll do follow-ups before then. So Tom,
yeah, you know, and it'll probably be the wildest, it'll probably be the wildest thing. It'll be like, something that we probably can't even imagine. So yeah,
maybe we'll be doing it.
It'll be interesting.
From the moon, who knows? So
I'll be, you'd be talking to an AI me, yeah. If I can't maybe kid probably or
no, I know, I prefer the real you, to be honest.
I prefer the real me.
So Tom, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Thank you for listening. I hope that you enjoyed it. Head over to your page, my page, and yeah, as for a deeper message, I'm not sure right now. I'm not sure what the world is right now, to be honest, to many people. But yeah, stay happy, stay safe, and yeah, peace and love. Hope to see you at a show soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.